Worldwide, cardiovascular disease affects the lives of hundreds of millions. Dedicated cardio nerds everywhere are working hard to fight this global epidemic. These are their stories.
Hey, Cardio Nerds family, this is Amit. On behalf of all of us at Cardio Nerds, we are thrilled to bring to you our Decipher the Guidelines series for the 2022 AHA/ACC/HFSA Guideline for the Management of Heart Failure. Get ready for short and bite-sized, high-impact, clinical vignette-based questions designed to highlight core concepts based on cutting-edge evidence that are relevant to your practice. The cases we use are hypothetical and created for educational purposes only. This series was developed by the Cardio Nerds and created in collaboration with the American Heart Association and the Heart Failure Society of America. It was created by 30 trainees spanning college student through advanced fellows, with mentorship from Dr. Anu Lala, Dr. Robert Menz, and Dr. Nancy Schweitzer. We thank Dr. Judy Bazanson and Dr. Elliot Antman for their guidance along the way. So friends, join us as we get to learn about the heart failure guidelines and beyond from 16 leading faculty experts. And now, let's get nerdy.
The following question refers to Section 13 of the 2022 AHA/ACC/HFSA Guideline for the Management of Heart Failure. The question is asked by Western Michigan University medical student and CardioNerds intern Shivani Reddy, answered first by CardioNerds Academy faculty Dr. Dinu Balnescu, and then by expert faculty Dr. Harriet Vanspahl. Dr. Vanspahl is an associate professor of medicine, cardiologist, and director of e-health at McMaster University. Dr. Vanspahl is a Canadian Institutes of Health Research funded clinical trialist and researcher with a focus on heart failure, health services, and health disparities. Dr. Vanspahl, it's a pleasure to have you, and welcome back to Cardio Nerds.
I am absolutely thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And we will start the case with Dr. Shivani Reddy presenting the case discussion.
Thank you so much, Justin. So we're going to switch it up today. We have a true or false question. So the statement is as follows. Palliative and supportive care have a role for patients with heart failure only in the end stages of their disease. So is this going to be true or false? And to help us out, we have Dinu here. So Dinu, could you help us out with the correct answer here?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question, Shivani. And it may be a short question stem today, but it carries such a deep meaning. So the correct answer for this question is false. Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding, I believe, in the concept of palliative care. Many people equate it to hospice. So let's just talk a little bit about palliative care and figure out why this statement is false. And then Dr. Vanspahl, we look forward to your input as well. So palliative care is patient and family-centered care that optimizes health-related quality of life by anticipating, preventing, and treating suffering, and should be integrated into the management of all stages of heart failure throughout the course of illness. The holistic model of palliative care includes high-quality communication, estimation of prognosis, anticipatory guidance, addressing uncertainty, shared decision-making about medically reasonable treatment options, advanced care planning, attention to physical, emotional, spiritual, and psychological distress, relief of suffering, and inclusion of family caregivers in patient care and attention to their needs during bereavement. As such, for all patients with heart failure, palliative and supportive care, which include high-quality communication, conveyance of prognosis, clarifying goals of care, shared decision-making, symptom management, and caregiver support should be provided to improve quality of life and relieve suffering. And that's a class one recommendation with the level of evidence C. For conveyance of prognosis, objective risk models can be incorporated along with discussion of uncertainty since patients may overestimate survival and the benefits of specific treatments. So in one sentence, hope for the best, plan for the worst. For clarifying goals of care, the exploration of each patient's values and concerns through shared decision-making are essential in important management decisions such as when to discontinue treatments, when to initiate palliative treatments that may hasten death but provide symptom management, planning the location of death, and the incorporation of home services or hospice. It is a class one indication that for patients with heart failure being considered for or treated with life-extending therapies, the option for discontinuation should be anticipated and discussed through the continuum of care including at the time of initiation, and reassessed with changing medical conditions and shifting goals of care with the level of evidence C. Caregiver support should also be offered to family members even beyond death to help them cope with the grieving process. A formal palliative care consult is not needed for each patient, but the primary team should exercise the above domains to improve processes of care and patient outcomes. Specialist palliative care consultation can be useful to improve quality of life and relieve suffering for patients with heart failure, particularly those with stage D heart failure who are being evaluated for advanced therapies, patients requiring inotropic support or temporary mechanical support, patients experiencing uncontrolled symptoms, major medical decisions, or multimorbidity, frailty, and cognitive impairment, class 2A, level of evidence B. Studies have been mixed on if the palliative team itself improves quality of life and well-being, so these interventions should definitely be tailored to each patient and caregiver. For patients with heart failure, execution of advanced directives can be useful to improve documentation of treatment preferences, delivery of patient-centered care, and dying in preferred place. That's a class of recommendation 2A with the level of evidence C. In patients with advanced heart failure with expected survival less than 6 months, timely referral to hospice can be useful to improve quality of life, and that's a class of recommendation 2A, and again, the level of evidence C. So my main takeaway from all this discussion is that the core principles of palliative care that include communication, transparency on prognosis, clarification of goals of care, shared decision-making, symptom management, and caregiver support should absolutely be integrated into each patient's treatment plan, regardless of the stage of heart failure. So now, Dr. Van Spaal, this is a domain that we don't think about the moment we, say, admit or evaluate a patient with heart failure. Our main goal is to improve symptoms, improve the EF, aggressive treatment. But at a certain point, we have to reassess, step back, look the case from above, so to speak, and also consider palliative treatments, especially since the guidelines include this so clearly. So what are your thoughts on palliative care in heart failure?
You know, I do not consider palliative care as the end of treatment or a defined point from which we transition from one to another care pathway. Palliation of symptoms should be a goal regardless of the disease stage. We certainly shift more to a symptom-focused approach as the patient transitions to the more advanced stages of heart failure. But people with heart failure, even during earlier stages, have symptoms that must be managed. And an important part of managing symptoms, in my opinion, is offering them evidence-based therapies. So for many patients, we continue these evidence-based medical therapies, which have been shown in clinical trials to improve health status and health-related quality of life, in addition to those clinical endpoints that we all pay attention to, but to continue these therapies for as long as possible. As disease stages advance, we note that patients become intolerant towards some therapies and develop side effects or adverse effects. Some of these have to do with progressive hypotension, in which case we stagger doses of these evidence-based medications. For example, you might choose to first down-titrate the ARNIs, which we know have limited role in advanced heart failure based on the LIFE trial, and transition to an ACE inhibitor or an ARB, stagger the dose of that medication with the beta blocker. Postural hypotension becomes an issue for some patients, so we try to adjust therapies to mitigate that side effect. Some patients become quite volume overloaded. They have refractory edema that we manage by transitioning to adjunctive diuretics therapy, switching from furosemide, for example, to Burinex, which has better bioavailability. And when patients become refractory, we switch to IV therapies, in some cases, subcutaneous furosemide, which was just approved by your FDA, but which we have been using for years. And also ensure that the patient understands their prognosis. I do this through all of the stages of heart failure, but particularly as heart failure becomes advanced, so they know to plan for what lies ahead. You know, patients who are admitted with heart failure often leave hospital not realizing that they're at a 4 to 5% risk of death in the weeks following hospitalization. They're at a 25 to 30% risk of readmission in those weeks. And patients remain in the dark about their prognosis through other points in their heart failure journey. So I'm constantly mindful of prognosis, and I address it in a way that is sensitive to what the patient's needs are. I'm also mindful of cultural preferences. There are some cultural groups that do not wish to know their prognosis. You know, the adult children step in and say, I don't want my mom or dad to know what their prognosis is. And I am mindful of including that mom or dad in all conversations. And I sometimes ask to clarify whether they would want to know their prognosis. But prognostication is important, as is planning around the patient's preferences and what they need to do. And sometimes, you know, for patients that you know well, you can delve into the other aspects of their life, their family life, and how they're going to plan for death when it becomes imminent. I had a favorite patient who was a World War II nurse, and she was this completely inspiring, strong woman who I loved to see. And as she ended the year of her life, we started talking about all the things in her apartment, all of the letters, the memorabilia from the war, her photographs, all of her china, and how she was going to manage all of those things that overwhelmed her. And she actually organized a party where she invited her kids, her grandkids, her nieces and nephews. She even invited me to give away some of those things while she was still alive. And it helped her cope and adjust to the fact that she was dying. You know, it also gave the family a chance to come together. So there's some things we do by the book, by the guidelines. And then there are other things that we do as we integrate ourselves with our patients' lives and help them plan for their end of life.
Wow, Dr. Ventspahl, thank you for answering our question here, but especially thank you for sharing that incredible, delightful story. It's so humbling to realize how involved we are in our patients' care. Now, you know, not just as pill pushers, but we're actually become parts of their lives overall. Now, it's clear that for us on the cardiology side, you know, when we treat heart failure, we treat symptoms and quality of life as well as we can. But is there a certain threshold? Is there a certain time when you would involve the palliative care team into your practice?
Yes. So in some cases, we involve palliative care earlier on when patients have symptoms that we can't manage. I'm not an expert in opioid therapy, for example, and I have patients who have comorbidities where pain becomes a significant issue. And in that case, I get palliative care specialists involved. There are palliative care home teams that can provide care to patients who are in their last months of life. And of course, there are hospices that provide an appropriate setting for patients who are often ill-equipped to manage their needs at home. Their family members and formal caregivers begin to feel overwhelmed when dyspnea becomes a frequent symptom. And in those cases, we refer patients to hospices. I will say that hospices do a much better job accepting patients with malignancies, and probably heart failure is underserved by hospices, especially in our region. But I do make referrals, and some patients are lucky enough to make it to a hospice in time. Other patients either use the hospital or a supportive care through private nursing or palliative care nursing in their homes. We've done research through all of the heart failure disease stages, but including end of life, a majority of patients want to die in the comfort of their home, but over 50% continue to die in the hospital in our healthcare system because there's a mismatch between the services that people need at the end of life and heart failure and the services that our healthcare system offers them. So we need to do better in this area. There are supportive care paths that we can embark on. And with digital health tools, we can extend care to patients in their home. This is a region of unmet need, and we can explore how patients can be served better through digital healthcare tools that are traditionally used earlier on in the disease stage. This is certainly something we are exploring through our research program.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bentz-Paul. We had somewhat of a somber discussion today, but one that I felt was still filled with hope, especially knowing that we actually have guidelines addressing this topic. It's a hint for us to integrate palliative care concepts more in the care of our heart failure patients. Shivani, did we answer your question?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dino, and thank you so much, Dr. Bentz-Paul, for that amazing overview of palliative care and how it relates to the care for patients with heart failure. And echoing what Dino had said, thank you, Dr. Bentz-Paul, for sharing that wonderful patient story with us. And it's really great to hear about how we're looking into ways to incorporate digital health tools as well. So that's something that I'll definitely look forward to following up on in the future. You know, I'm just going to say one more thing. In cardiology, we focus so much on the high acuity, invasive, and exciting aspects of care. People remember what you said, how you related to them, and the comfort you offered them when their loved one is dying. They probably remember that more than some of the things we do in those high acuity settings that draw us to cardiology. And so I just want to leave everyone with that thought that the impact and our role as physicians continue on through to the end of life. And sometimes those last few days and how you responded to a person's needs can leave more of an impact on the family and more of a memory when they think about the death of their loved one than some of the other things we do. So an important part of our role and our mission as cardiologists. Thank you so much. That was, you know, certainly such an important reminder and helping us think back to how medicine is really both an art and a science. And so given that, it absolutely is important to acknowledge that our efforts as healers is equally as important as our efforts as care providers and doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all so much for having me, friends. I look forward to being back sometime with you.